You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. I've been telling Sarah Barnhart some stories, a little bit of background information about this show, but also I was struck by a story that I saw on Facebook. One of my, a fan of mine, someone who's become a Facebook friend named Jessica, posted this story in the middle of the night, and it's an essay by a woman who had been in an emotionally abusive relationship. And we've talked a little bit about this on the show before, and I know one of our listeners asked me to name him. Even though I do talk about Tom Daniels, it's not Tom Daniels. I would not put this guy's name out there because, it's so painful to me that I don't even want to stir things up with people. But he used to work at the Improv in Chicago, and I was only 21 years old. He was 7 years older than me, and we started dating, and he became very controlling. And he would call me a child. He would yell at me about, you know, that I was ignorant and I was an idiot. We ended up moving in together, and I remember I was supposed to pick him up one day at Belmont and Halsted. This is before we all had cell phones. And I was like 10, 15, 20 minutes late, something like that. And I got to the intersection, and I didn't find him. I like got out of the car. I walked around, tried to see if he was in a couple of restaurants, and he wasn't there. And I got home, and he had his feet up on a table smoking a cigarette. Tom smoked. It's not Tom Daniels. It's a different guy. And he just started hissing at me. You are such a child. He goes, I can't trust you to do anything. And just sort of like, just as slow, gosh. I know, he goes, I can't believe, he goes, well, you're so immature. You don't know how to be responsible for anything. And I was just like, you know, I felt really, and I became apologetic. And I was like, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to be late. I got stuck in traffic. I mean, Belmont and Halsted is a really densely populated area. And it was just hard to get to. I'm like, I'm getting the sweats just thinking about all the times I would come home and he'd be waiting for me to tell me like how stupid I was, or was I sleeping with somebody else? He accused me of sleeping with another comic. I came home one night and he was sitting in the dark. All the lights were out. He was just sitting in the dark waiting for me, and all you could see was the cigarette burning in the dark. And he asked me, how was it effing Mike Burton, this other comic I was working with? And I just, the way he would talk to me, I was like, oh my, what, you know, it felt wrong, but at the same time, like, he wasn't doing anything. Like, he wasn't hitting me. He was just saying things to me that just, he was accusing me, calling me stupid. And then Mike Burton actually was on stage at the Improv. Tom was the sound guy, and we were all auditioning for CBS, and he didn't do anything during my set. He turned off Mike Burton's microphone in the middle of his set. So, like, people started to know that it was because he was jealous, and like none of the comics wanted to have anything to do with me. I started to get isolated from other comics. This is what abusers do, by the way. They isolate you. They cut you off from your friends, your family. I had friends who didn't like him. They didn't trust him. So rather than saying anything to me, and sometimes when you talk to somebody and say, you know, I don't like the way he talks to you. I don't like the way he treats you. That victim is like, no, but you know, they get mad at you.
Right.
And your friends, yeah, they get defensive because they also don't like having made a mistake, right? Because they feel like they're in love with them. And that was kind of, and then he would start throwing me out. He would tell me to pack my stuff and get out. So I would start packing my things, and he would start crying and tell me that because he loved me so much, I made him act that way. I made him crazy. And that's why he behaved that way. So he threw me out three times, and mostly it would be because he thought I was sleeping with somebody else, or just that I was ignorant, and he couldn't stand to look at me anymore, and I should just get out. And, Craig, I don't think, have I ever mentioned like the night that I actually went, well, this is crazy. I have to go now.
I can't. I know I'm familiar think with the story, night, but I feel like it hasn't happened on air.
My dog's name was Pepper, and a really cute little schnoodle, half schnauzer, half poodle. And I went home to visit my dad. My mom was traveling, and I was like, I'm going to go hang out with my dad and my dog Pepper. And I got home really late. I'm a late night person. My dad and I used to stay up watching late movies and stuff and just talking. And I got home like maybe 3-4 in the morning, and Tom goes, so how was your little doggy? And I was like, are you accusing me of something else? And he's like, yeah, you were not at your dad. You were not hanging out with your dad and your little doggy until 4 a.m. And I thought, well, this is just crazy. I mean, like, I know where I was. I was hanging out with my dog and my dad. Pepper was like 18 years old. So I used to go spend as much time as I could with her. And I was like, you're nuts. I was like, you are out of your mind. There was nothing going on. Cause that's the thing too, is that when you know, it's maddening, you know, you haven't done anything wrong. Right. And this person is telling you that you are misbehaving, that you are making them crazy, that you're making them be mean to you. It was basically what he would say to me. So I said, you know what? I'm leaving, but I'm going to sleep first. And he wouldn't let me into our bedroom. So I was like, that's fine. I don't want to sleep with you tonight. So I was laying on the couch. Craigie stood over me for hours. I don't know why I laid there. I could have just gotten in my car, but I had cats. And I didn't want to leave my cats behind. And I didn't know if I could bring them to my parents' house or where I was going to go with Cagney and Shoeless. And he stood over me going, telling me I was never going to find love, that Holy I was delusional. God. And I was laying there thinking, like any side of like, just, you know, if my confidence got shook, if I was like, maybe he's right, maybe he's the only person who's going to love me. I was 21. I was 22 years old or whatever. I dropped out of grad school to become a stand-up comic. I had put my entire life on the line. I left a very, you know, safe, stable environment, and here was someone telling me that I was never going to find love, that I wasn't worthy of love, that I was lucky to have him in my life. He one time threatened to bring home other women because I had stopped.
He also sits in the dark smoking cigarettes, stands over you while you're asleep. Creepy. He is the creepiest. By the way, from the 224. Your story of your relationship that was emotionally abusive sounds like a relationship I'm in right now. So the kind of, and part of the point you've said on the show before is to make people feel like they're not alone and maybe help them in a bad time. 224.
Yes, no. Please. If there's something we can do, if you want us to grab your information, if you want any advice, I know it's so hard because your friends do stop talking to you because they don't like the person that you're with. And this goes for men or women. Women can be abusive and make you feel like you're... And there is a thing where someone will ask, well, how can they make you feel that way? Because you love them or you think that you love them. And this great essay that I posted on my Facebook page, and I'll share it on our Patty V show. The last thing she writes is that she stayed because she thought she loved him until she realized she loved herself more. You have to realize that you love yourself more and that you don't deserve that. No one deserves to be told that they're worthless, that they are stupid, that they are cheating, especially when you know your reality and someone refuses to accept what you know in your heart, that you haven't done anything wrong, that you are not a bad person, and you know that you are worthy. And they keep telling you, though, and you just keep, you start feeling small and you feel isolated, you feel alone. And it's scary too if you're living with somebody because now you're also depending on them. You've put a security deposit and like all the stupid small reasons. My cats. I stayed an extra month because of Cagney and Shoeless.
Well, and sometimes too, obviously the relationship didn't start there. That's something that developed as you went. Sometimes it's hard to realize when something new is entering into a relationship that this is an actual thing. This is actually a part of the new kind of dynamic and it needs to be fixed or you need to remove yourself because of it. Sometimes it's hard to see that when you remember the past few months and they were better.
Well, or years. Like this woman said it was a year. What were you say, Sarah?
Well, yeah. And then you find yourself thinking, you remember back to the good times and you find yourself thinking, oh, it's this was just a fluke. It'll go back to the good times or, yeah, that's
yeah, because and they do. The thing is that there can be huge gaps of time where everything is fine and then it happens months later or a year later.
Right.
And then, you know, and then you're like, oh, but I stayed and I put my time in. I mean, and I've given you so much of myself.
Someone attempting to be in control would know that you can't always be one way. I've heard it a lot, and actually I experienced it through a close family relationship too, that sometimes they do. They break and they act very sweet and very nice, but that's just to reinforce
the control.
The control aspect, yeah. So it's hard to determine what's, you know.
Yeah, what I was drawn to, and the reason it was so good at first was like he made me feel like, I mean, and again, made me, right? And I let him feel. I don't know what the right language is for it because I just remember thinking, I just feel so powerful. He made me feel sexy and beautiful and intelligent. He made me feel like I was smart and I was like the most captivating person. Like he held me up on his pedestal until he told me I was the sexiest woman he'd ever been with. And I was young and I thought, wow, I mean, like this is a guy who, you know, has been to New York. He's traveled the world and been in the theater and done all these amazing things. And he thinks that I'm amazing. And I was drawn to that. And we would, you know, and I remember we traveled, we drove in a car from here to Boston. He had property in Maine. And there were little things he would say, like he didn't like my dad because he was like, you know, the world will be a better place when people like your dad are gone. Like you said, I know. And that was one of the, because my dad was old, it was old Chicago. Like my dad, we talked about him before. Like my dad was part of the sort of the machine of Chicago. He knew like the right people and how to grease the wheels and get out of a ticket, or he knew the right politicians or the right lawyers. And he would tell me like how crooked my dad was. And then he told me about his grandfather owning this property in Maine and how his grandfather had taken advantage of all these poor people during the Great Depression and had gotten this property by basically buying it for cents on the dollar. And I was like, how do you figure that? And he was so proud of this cottage in Maine. And I thought, how do you figure that that's, you know, we all have something in our family that is, you know, maybe untoward or, you know, our skeletons, but that's something you're proud of. And my dad should die, you know, it was one of those illogical things. And that was like one of the first threads. And that I remember thinking, this guy just told me the world would be a better place without my dad. Mm-hmm. And that sort of shook me.
Yeah.
And we had just signed a lease on an apartment, and so we were driving to Boston on our way to Maine, and he wouldn't turn the air conditioning on. I can't remember what it was, something like, you know, it wasn't good for the environment. It was really hot. It was the middle of summer, and I was sweating the whole, and I had the window down. I was just trying to cool off, and he refused to turn the air. It was like a weird control thing. Like I wasn't going to be comfortable. Because of the whatever it was, we weren't going to turn the air on.
By the way, from the 630, yet again, listening to you describe this story reminds me of my own story. Wow, it's creepy to hear someone else say things like this. So
yeah,
there's a lot of people out there.
It is abuse. It is abuse to feel, to have someone tell you you're not worthy, to have someone tell you that you're stupid, to isolate you, to break you off from the what you know to be yourself. You have to love yourself more than that person.
A friend and I were actually, not in quite in this sense, but we were talking about this tonight. Like, you are your number one.
Yes.
And even if you are in a relationship where a great relationship, you're still your number one. You're the person you have to look out for in any situation.
Yeah.
And I can't relate personally.
And you don't have to. You have friends, but be aware for your friends and be there.
But I do have friends that I can relate on their behalf.
And you have no idea. I didn't know how good of friends I had because when I decided to leave, he came to where I worked and threatened to kill me and kill himself. And that's where I had to have friends step in, and I had to get the authorities involved. And I didn't know how much danger I was in until that day. More after this on 720 WGN.